is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy. Obviously, I am not Tom Hartman. I'm here with Shano today, filling in for Tom while he is on a much-deserved vacation. And if you are in the L.A. area, join Tom and Dennis Kucinich and Senator Bernie Sanders next weekend, this weekend coming up, March 28th through the 29th, at Sister Giant. Get all the info over at TomHartman.com or, of course, SisterGiant.com. In the meantime, the big news today out of Liberty University was that we have a new presidential contender in the ring. And comedians everywhere have rejoiced. So we wanted to speak with the one, the only, John Fugelsang, political commentator, brilliant comedian, and host of Tell Me Everything on Sirius Channel 121. You can check it out weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. John, tell me you were cheering while listening to Ted Cruz's speech.
Oh, it's a great day. And anytime somebody who graduated from Princeton and Harvard decides to announce their run for president at Liberty University, you know the comedy's going to be strong. And what can I say? Ted Cruz is the Abraham Lincoln of Sarah Palin's. And I am really, really excited he has begun his long journey towards one day starring in a reverse mortgage commercial.
With Fred Thompson, yes.
With Fred Thompson, yes.
Oh, co-hosting. Fred Thompson can't do it forever, and we need someone else on that wall. And Ted Cruz is the man.
Fred Thompson is getting pretty tired. So, I mean, this is the stuff comedy was made for. Ted Cruz, he of, you know, Green Eggs and Ham and shutting down the government, now thinks he's qualified to run it. How do you take something like this seriously? I mean, do we laugh at this at our own peril?
Well, you know, let's see how it goes. I'm going to laugh at it ridiculously until I have to leave the country. But, you know, I think it's going to be fine. Ted Cruz is about to become history's latest IQ test for America in the 21st century. And we know that most Republicans know that Ted Cruz is only in it for Ted Cruz. His petulant little government shutdown and his threats to shut down the government additional times have proven that. He's not in it for the party. He's in it for Ted and for Ted's own benefit. And most of your sane conservative brothers and sisters will know this, but there's a very special kind of Palinista who will look to Ted like he's Moses. And it's important to remember that, you know, there's been a lot of accusations thrown at some conservatives for hypocrisy because Ted Cruz wasn't born in the country. Let me explain how it works. Ted Cruz, born in Canada to an American mother, is American, okay? Barack Obama was born in America to an American mother, and he's Kenyan. And that's all you need to know.
I'm sure that has nothing to do with the color of their skin. That's just a coincidence. Just a coincidence.
Well, it's all about racism. And I'll say it proudly because these guys have never once in their life asked a single Caucasian politician. They've never demanded it. They've never politely asked a Caucasian politician to prove their citizenship. And half of them didn't believe it themselves. It's all about getting the mouth breathers to associate Obama with being other.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't bother to ask John McCain, despite the fact that he was born in Panama, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't disputed, you know. But again, those people weren't using race to divide Americans.
So what can we expect, in your opinion, from the for the next, what, year and a half, a little more than that, for Ted Cruz's presidency? I'm getting these flashbacks of Steve Martin in Leap of Faith in that Preacher movie. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but I kind of suspect...
Well, exactly. He's an Elmer Gantry type. Yeah, I mean, he's a very good public speaker, and he's very good at making people feel good about being lied to. And essentially, that's the American way, isn't it? We're just a big nation of Carmela Sopranos. We just want the man to tell us what we want to hear, and then we'll go shopping. And Ted Cruz is the right guy for the job. Look, comedically, he's going to be great, and his arrogance is greater than his integrity, so he will screw up on the campaign trail plenty. There's going to be a very crowded GOP field, and the greatest tragedy would be if there wasn't a crowded Democratic field. If it's a coronation for Mrs. Clinton, it's just... Her outcome is being a one-term punching bag at best. So I'm hoping that she'll get some challenges. I do believe Martin O'Malley is definitely getting in the race, and it looks like Bernie's going to run as a Democrat, and we keep hearing rumors about Elizabeth Warren going back on her nose. So, you know, I want a big clouded field on both sides. That's good for democracy, and I like the reality show aspect of it. It engages people. It makes people follow and pay attention. we have a media that tends to focus on personalities more than real issues. And I don't expect a lot of issues to get discussed unless Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren get in the race. But it's going to be great comedy on the Republican side, and they don't have anyone who can beat Mrs. Clinton. Ted Cruz is there purely for our entertainment. It's not a serious run. And, I mean, president of Texas, yeah, I can see that happening. But that's about as good as it's going to get.
I just want to quickly remind everybody, we're speaking with John Fugelsang, political commentator, comedian, and host of Tell Me Everything, weekdays 2 to 5 p.m. on Sirius Channel 121. For anybody listening now and hearing the brilliant, hilarious points that you make, John, why, if they're not already, as they should be, tuning into your show after they're listening to Tom, why should they listen today?
Well, I'm glad you asked. What we're doing on the show is sort of a hybrid. It's not a regular political show. It's sort of like one-third politics, one-third NPR, one-third early Howard Stern on NBC without the integrity. And today is no exception. We're going to be having comedian Lee Camp, who was redacted tonight right there in D.C. with you guys. Bob Seska, who is the managing editor of the Daily Banter, will be joining me as well. We're also going to have a couple who've just written a book about open marriages. We're trying to do a lot about relationships and about, funny stuff. And so this is a couple that has written a book about it. And I've known couples in open marriages before. 85% of American women in open marriages actually don't know it yet. But I think it's a very fascinating conversation about the essence of monogamy and what it means in the 21st century. And then finally, we're going to be having from the Howard Stern Show himself for a full hour, Jackie the Joke Man Martling, who's going to join us and be as offensive as possible with myself and my sidekick, TV's Frank of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
That is amazing. And right on time. It's like the news cycle wanted to provide you guys with lots to talk about and lots of fodder, if you will, for a comedic roundtable as great as the one you just listed.
Well, that's how it always is, though. I mean, there's always stuff to talk about. And, you know, our show does a lot of music. We do a lot of comedy. We do a lot of health and nutrition, science, tech, family, parenting, and we have, of course, lots of politics and religion. So, you know, for me, I wanted the show to be as diverse as possible and to cover as much ground as possible. So it's really, really fun doing a show that can go from funny to serious or political to goofy on a dime.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed listening to it since you've started the new show. And for anybody listening throughout the country, when's the next place somebody can come out and see you in person in stand-up?
Oh, well, thank you. I'm going to be performing this Saturday night in Connecticut, actually at a – where am I going to be this weekend? I'm in Collinsville, Connecticut at Bridge Street Live with the hilarious comedian Sean Lynch, and I'm doing a 45-minute headlining set. And then if you're in New York City, I think I'll be at Upright Citizens Brigade East with Frank this Thursday night.
Well, that's awesome.
I'm promoting all of this on my various Facebooks and Twitters. And then, yeah, as soon as Tom is over, and not 1 second before, you can flip over to SiriusXM 121 and listen to our show. And it's been really fun. We've had a lot of great guests. In the last couple of weeks, we've had everyone from William H. Macy to Zachary Quinto, tons of journalists, tons of, you know, musical artists, and lots of comics from Gilbert Gottfried to Rosie O'Donnell to Paul Provenza and Alonzo Bowden. So it's a pretty eclectic mix.
It really every time we listen to your show, I'm amazed at the diverse group of people you get together. It's really incredible to listen to. And quickly, before we have to run, I have one question for you that we're going to ask the audience, and I think you would have the most brilliant response. What should we name Ted Cruz's super PAC?
Oh, wow. I would say Cruz, but not in a gay way.
Perfect. John Fugelsang, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
John Fugelsang, host of Tell Me Everything on Sirius, Channel 121.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what should we call Ted Cruz's super PAC? Or how about Marco Rubio's or Rand Paul's? Got any good ideas? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. This just in from The New Yorker. A disturbed man tries to get into the White House. A disturbed Canadian man wants to try to get into the White House, according to reports. The man, who was born in Calgary before drifting to Texas, has been spotted in Washington, D.C. in recent years, exhibiting erratic behavior, sources said. In 2013, he gained entry to the United States Senate and was heard quoting incoherently from a children's book before he was finally subdued.
I think we actually have tape of that.
Do we?
We do have a little bit here.
Say, I like green eggs and ham. I do. I like them, Sam I Am.
More recently, he was heard ranting about a plan to dismantle large components of the federal government, such as the Internal Revenue Service and the nation's health care program, despite a record of such bizarre episodes and unhinged utterances. Observers expressed little concern about his plans to get into the White House, calling them delusional. Thank you, Andy Borowitz. Yes, talking about Ted Cruz. But
you asked a really interesting question, though, of John. That while we, there is going to be lots of fodder for comedians,
yes,
do we take him as a joke at our peril? You know, should we take him more seriously and must we look at him more seriously, or will he just implode on himself?
Well, in general, I think that we as progressives sometimes do take candidates like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, for instance, as too much of a joke.
I found it interesting that there was not much talk of him in making an announcement, but last week it came down the line that Rand Paul announced that he was going to be announcing, and then it was Ted Cruz getting into it.
Yes.
It was almost like overnight. I heard nothing about this. In fact, if you go, because we found out about this, of course, over the weekend when the Houston Chronicle first reported this, so... It, for political talk radio, it was the equivalent of having a supermoon at the same time of a solar eclipse.
Yes.
It was like, oh, goody, we have Monday. So we were going through the different websites, and at the Liberty University website, it was still, you know, to be
TBA,
announced.
Yes.
Yeah, to be announced. So it was somewhat last minute. But I think, one, the establishment, I think, of the Republican Party is not into him. The moneyed interests, which pretty much control the GOP establishment, not much into him. You'll notice a lot of his speech, for those, probably not going to play a whole lot of clips from where we can tell you what he had
right
to say.
People can listen to it if they'd like.
Then I don't really feel like propelling his message of, you know, repealing Obamacare and shutting down the IRS is, you know, I don't think that's time well spent, quite
right.
Honestly. We can have the conversation. He was talking more about mobilizing millions of Christians. That seemed to be what he was trying to do. You know, to heck with the establishment, to heck with the money. I'm going to get born again Christians to come out for me. And that could be a powerful force. On the other hand, we will have Mike Huckabee in there. I'm wondering if that religious vote might get split up into enough pieces that someone like a Scott Walker or a Jeb Bush could come in, and then there wouldn't even be that opportunity in Iowa.
Well, it's an interesting thought in the primary. But I think there really is something to consider if one of these, you know, obviously religious candidates gets mm-hmm. onto an actual Republican ticket. Because, as you said, the party, the leaders, if you will, aren't going to want one of these more extreme candidates. However, you put them somewhere on the ticket or even sure. in the administration, and you might still pull from that religious vote. And
the Republicans have courted that base, so they've got to listen to that base.
Right.
You know, that if they didn't, that would be malpractice on their part.
There's also a lot of money
sure.
that comes from that base.
Well, there's a whole intricate, you know, intertwined bunch of people and groups, some names you're going to recognize, that our next guest is going to talk with you about, that I cannot wait to hear about. It was one of those holy cow moments.
Yes.
When we came upon his research.
We are just a few minutes away from speaking with Bruce Wilson. And just to give you a little background on our next guest, he's the co-founder of a blog, Talk to Action, the number two action. And he's the former director of the Center Against Religious Extremism.
But he has a lot of interesting information about Ted Cruz and his background
right.
going way back. You know, we all, at least I, and I think a lot of Tom's listeners, first were introduced to Ted Cruz as a senatorial candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually surprised a lot of people by winning, and then he has a booming voice and a big microphone, and a lot of people put the mics in front of him because he's entertaining, I guess, for lack of a better word. So he's gained a lot of notoriety. But before then, he has a very storied history about all of his connections and in interminglings. You know, he argued in front of the Supreme Court 9 times.
Well, I didn't
know that. As
Solicitor
General of Texas. And not always on the side you'd think. He, you know, he won some, he lost some. One of these cases, he was arguing in defense of putting the Ten Commandments monument up. in government buildings in Texas. So, you know, a lot of conservative arguments he was making as Solicitor General there. But the political ties are the ones that are really super interesting, I think.
The political and the religious ties are the most interesting to me. And there really is some serious points to consider, because a lot of these religious organizations have a vast amount of power in this country, both financially and politically. And, you know, I am the first one to love to make jokes about Ted Cruz, because
they joked about Ronald Reagan. How is that actor who, you know, did movies with a chimpanzee going to become president? And he became president. And you know, love him or hate him, he had a gigantic impact on the history of this nation.
Well, just like we loved to make jokes about Mitt Romney and the White Horse prophecy. Shano, you have another name for Ted Cruz's prophecy.
Yeah, it's going to be the Jack prophecy.
Ah. Another name for a donkey.
Yes. We're not going to say the word, but we'll probably bring this up a lot, the Jack prophecy today. and we'll describe what that might look like.
Yes, and we want to hear what you think as well. We're going to speak with Bruce Wilson. We're going to hear about some of the scarier points in Ted Cruz's past that we really need to know about before we just discount him as the next Sarah Palin.
And we want to know your thoughts on what a Ted Cruz presidency would look like, for real. Not
what
just
should
what
we
says.
Call his super PAC?
What can we call a super PAC? What might his theme be? Remember, for Barack Obama, it was change we can believe in or hope. What would his be?
Yeah.
I think we could have some interesting suggestions on that.
All great questions that I'm sure you will have brilliant responses on. And we're going to speak with Bruce Wilson, and we're going to get right to your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And we have to ask, can Ted Cruz even be president if he was born in Canada? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and me, and I, Danielle, sitting in for Tom today as he is off on vacation. Much-deserved vacation, and I promise we will get to your calls. There's lots of people who want to weigh in about Ted Cruz and his new candidacy. However, we simply could not wait to speak with our next guest, Bruce Wilson, co-founder of the blog Talk to Action and former director of the Center Against Religious Extremism. You can check out his work at talk2action.org. That's talk2action.org. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
We were just so excited to speak with you. I don't want to steal your thunder here and give away the amazing connections that you uncovered between Ted Cruz and so many characters that I think the listeners would like to know about. So please, instead of just joking about Ted Cruz, please tell us what we need to know, what we need to understand about how he came to power.
Well, to understand Ted Cruz, you have to understand him as the son of his father, Rafael Cruz, about whom a lot could be said. He actually fought with Fidel Castro and became disenchanted with the revolution and fled to Florida, became a quite successful businessman and then a pastor. But beyond that, Rafael Cruz was also part of the religious coalition that came together in 1979 and successfully elected Ronald Reagan. And this happened, Rafael Cruz was one of the co-founders of something called the Religious Roundtable, which was an early formulation of the religious right. And then soon after that came the founding of the Moral Majority. Now, moving ahead a few years into the future, in 1999, Ted Cruz could be found arranging a meeting with a man who created an awful lot of the infrastructure that's powered the religious right over the years. And that man was Paul Weyrich. Weyrich was a co-founder of the sits in the Council for National Policy. He was a co-founder of the Moral Majority, and he basically picked Jerry Falwell to head that and or co-lead it. Eric helped create the Heritage Foundation, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and on and on. And so Eric is a huge figure who basically arranged for a lot of the funding for the creation of the religious right. So, well, so George W. Bush is gearing up his push to become president. And what happens is that Ted Cruz arranges a meeting between one of the people serving on the Bush campaign, Timothy Gogline, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, and Paul Weyrich. And the kicker is that Gogline didn't know Weyrich. Ted Cruz did. He had those connections to one of the top three people responsible for creating the modern religious right. So what this says is Cruz isn't putting on an act. He's not just giving the religious right base what they want to hear. He is a fully fledged member of the movement. So if you view things from that perspective, everything fits. Is, you know, shutting down the government or aggressively pushing anti-gay legislation, all of it. And beyond that, Cruz has been, he's attended a slew of events over the past couple of years at which events designed to draw pastors into politics. There's something called the Renewal Project, headed by a guy named David Lane. And Lane's been on a nonstop tour of the United States for, I think, about two decades. And it's all he does. He just holds these events. He gets contact info, emails, phone numbers of pastors. I think by this point, he should have an email of 100,000 pastors, which is a fair chunk of all the pastors in the United States.
Wow.
So Lane's created this machine for a get-out-the-vote machine, just almost single-handedly. I mean, he's got funding. Someone gives him money to do it, but he's the key guy doing this. And so Ted Cruz and Rafael Cruz have been, since 2003 at least, have appeared at a lot of these David Lane events.
Even today's announcement at Liberty University with Jerry Falwell and asking for people's cell phone numbers, essentially asking them to text him and verify their cell phone information, all plays into these connections, this background with Paul Weyrich, the goo-goo government quote that Tom, just for the listeners here, that Tom plays all the time, that Paul Weyrich guided Ted Cruz through his early political career and helped get George Bush, Ronald Reagan, all of these people elected. Those are the type of forces working behind Ted Cruz. I mean, this is all connected. Am I right, Bruce?
Oh, sure. I mean, Ted Cruz has the connections. I mean, he didn't graduate from Harvard to get his law degree. Anyway, he wound up serving as a clerk for the late Supreme Court Justice Rehnquist. So he came with very high-level connections, and I don't think he's a slouch. He's a very sharp guy, but he grew up fully within the movement. And in some of this footage I posted from Rafael Cruz talking at these various events that he and Ted Cruz go to, the David Lane events and so on, Rafael Cruz, he says a number of things. He comes right out with the main narrative that propels the whole religious right, that this is one of the core ones. When the Bible was taken out of public schools in 1963, so according to Rafael Cruz, suddenly there is this devastating impact. He says teen pregnancy skyrocketed, promiscuity skyrocketed, vandalism skyrocketed, high school dropout rates skyrocketed. And now that's a narrative that's manufactured by the Christian history, someone say Christian history falsifier, David Barton, who's most a recent book, I think, it was called The Jefferson Lies, got pulled by the publisher for numerous inaccuracies. But anyway, David Barton is one of the regulars, along with Ted Cruz and Rafael Cruz, at these David Lane events. Rafael Cruz tells essentially the narrative about the Bible being pulled, taken out of schools, and then all these disastrous consequences. That David Barton manufactured that narrative. That's his creations.
And these ideas that we often hear Ted Cruz talk about, and some people often don't take seriously, I think I've even been guilty of thinking that he's just reaching out trying to get the support from the really extreme Christians. This is essentially his background, according to all the work you've done.
Yeah, it's that David Barton narrative, that would have been what Ted Cruz was essentially weaned on, to put it bluntly. Regardless of whether he believes it or not, Ted Cruz knows full well that his activist base is deeply attached to this narrative, which is fits into a larger narrative of Christian nationalism and the need for believers to get involved in politics to reclaim what once was a Christian nation whose rightful heritage has been stolen by scheming secularists.
Yeah, it honestly makes, you know, me and Shane co-hosting here with me ask the question if Ted Cruz is kind of the Trojan horse of a theocracy, of a religious government, because you have this movement of saying that our downfall as a nation was moving away from the Bible. And then, as you know, quoting from your article here, Weyrich's Free Congress Foundation, which essentially, just to summarize, says that they want to destroy the country and rebuild it in the image that they prefer. It's very easy to take him not serious, you know, to not take him seriously. But these are really concerning points, and your research, your background shows that it's not just a talking point for him, that we need to really be aware of this and be mindful of it as he rises in power.
Yeah, I guess one of the key questions is, will mainstream media pick it up? The evidence is out there. You have Ted Cruz at these events with his father, and his father is sort of espousing this Christian nationalist narrative, and then you have a previous event. And Rafael Cruz could be found in 2012, Texas megachurch, talking essentially believer conquer what are called the seven mountains, seven key sectors of society. And I'll throw in that in the 2008 election, footage of Sarah Palin being surfaced, showing her being blessed by a Kenyan pastor who before that gave a speech about the very same seven mountains. And so the idea that believers have to take positions of influence or power on seven key sectors of society, business, government, so on. And often the word used in conjunction with that is infiltrate.
I think your phone is breaking up just a little bit, Bruce, but I have to say that this topic is just so fascinating that I think we could talk to you for the rest of the 3-hour show. But unfortunately, we don't have that luxury. Hopefully, you'll come back again maybe have this conversation with Tom and get into more of that amazing research you've done. And people can check it out at Huffington Post, at talktoaction.org, anywhere else that they can find your work?
It's scattered around in various places on the Internet. I can put up a post at my talktoaction.org site to lead people to some of the relevant stories I've done about Cruz.
Absolutely. I think people are really going to be looking for your amazing research right about now, so I hope you'll put it up there. Bruce Wilson, thank you so much.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You absolutely have to check out Bruce's research over at TalkToAction.org. Amazing information. You won't be disappointed. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman program here on Free Speech TV. Thank you guys for being patient.
Like I said, holy cow.
Yeah.
It was holy cow.
I have to tell you, I have 4 different articles here and emails back and forth with Bruce. There is so much information that you just couldn't possibly cover in 11 minutes. But I have a feeling we're going to see a lot about his work in the mainstream media. They're going to have to pick it up. They can't simply ignore it. So without further ado, let's get to some of your calls, starting with Ronald. Watching in Jacksonville, Florida. Ronald, thank you for watching Free Speech TV.
Hey, how y'all doing?
We are doing very well. Thank you.
Yeah, so one of my questions I was wondering, how can Ted Cruz run for president, being that he's Canadian, is that acceptable, or is that something that's been done before, basically?
I don't think it's been done before, but essentially what happened in the Constitution is that only natural-born citizens could be president of the United States, or if you were already a citizen as of the signing of the Constitution. Yeah, there's no one that's 226 years old around now, so we don't have to worry about that second group. But so therefore, we have to deal with natural-born citizens. That's never been defined. It's never gone before the Supreme Court. No one said what natural-born citizen means. Everyone has an opinion. You know, Harvard law professors have written saying, well, he had one parent that was an American citizen, therefore he is. And then, of course, there was the whole kerfuffle about President Obama. But it hasn't been defined, so it's something that hasn't been tested. Is it a question we can ask? Yeah. Do we want to play into the birther movement? Maybe not. I think it's kind of code for questioning someone's patriotism. But you know, the quick answer is we don't know, because there's no court that I know of has said what a natural born citizen is in the context of running for president. Does that help?
I mean, yes, it helps, but doesn't you think that should be something we should delegate or say up front? I mean, at the lateral half of President Obama. Mm-hmm. And everybody was questioning his natural birthright,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to see whatchamacallem. I mean, I think if it is something, it's something we should deal with up front. I mean, it's something we should make a guideline, basically stand how we feel, what the policy should be thereof. So, mm-hmm. I mean,
wouldn't one way to make
to
one
to play after the fact?
Right. Well, wouldn't one way of making a policy for us is just by voting? You know, the thing is we can't stop the birthers from running around saying that President Obama wasn't born in the United States and he's Kenyan. But they're fools, and they've been largely marginalized as fools. Do we really want to have to go to court and write this really bright line?
The way I look at it, first of all, I want to specify that, you know, Ted Cruz is an American citizen.
Right.
There are plenty of reasons to dislike him and not want him to be our next president besides whether or not one of his parents is Canadian. But we have lots of men and women all over the world on military bases,
mm-hmm.
and some of them might have children on those military bases.
John
McCain. And I certainly would not want to disqualify every one of those potential future leaders as our next president simply because their parents were serving overseas. And so for me, that's good enough. You know, other people are certainly welcome to their opinions, and we can discuss them.
I also can understand the kind of turnabout is fair play. You know, you went after our president.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're gonna dish it out.
Absolutely.
So you can take it.
It's not coming out of a vacuum. There's obviously a reason why people want to bring this up. So we're gonna get to even more of your calls, Ronald. Thank you for weighing in there in Jacksonville, Florida. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and I are sitting in for Tom today. He is out on vacation, and I want to quickly remind you that if you're in L.A. this weekend, March 28th and 29th, Tom will be speaking at a Sister Giant 3 event with Marianne Williamson, and he'll be speaking along with former Congressman Dennis Kucinich and Senator Bernie Sanders. So if you're in the area and want to get tickets, check out sistergiant.com. You can click the link over at tomhartman.com. And if you're not in the area, you can watch it on live stream. So
it's being streamed, yes.
Very cool. Very cool event that you might want to check out. Lots more calls.
Yeah. Do we want to go through the, since Ted Cruz was born in Canada, we have this question over the break. Do we want to do that, or do you want to pick up another call with the same question and answer?
We can pick up the same call with another call with the same question. Let's go with
for the commercial stations.
Ron in Indio, California. Is that right, Ron? Is that the name of your city?
Yeah.
So what you have the same question, that whether or not Ted Cruz can run for president?
Yes, I had the same question. I was looking it up on a computer, and I saw the same question, and they didn't settle it with John McCain because he was born in Panama with military parents, I believe. And they didn't settle that. They kind of fudged it. And it could have been a Supreme Court case, but they didn't settle it. Mm-hmm. Of course, then he didn't win the election, so it wasn't settled. And I believe there was another case with Chester, one of those one of those old presidents.
Chester Arthur?
That they thought he was born in Canada, but then they did some research then, and he was born in Vermont or something like that. Maybe they fudged it, you know, that research, just to make sure he was born in Vermont. But it is pretty clear that you have to be a natural-born citizen in the Constitution.
Right.
Right. We just haven't defined what natural-born citizen means. Does that mean born of an American parent, or does that mean born on American soil?
Or does it mean only born in the United States?
That's been pretty clear by precedent, you know, so I don't know how else you would define it except by precedent. So you can say that you can go and make new definitions, but the precedent has been it's been natural born by the place you were born. And that's what every other country says it is. It's where you're born. You're born in that country. And so that's really been the precedent of it.
Hmm.
Now, if we want to change it, that would have to be a court case.
That's not necessarily true, because there has not been a Supreme Court case that says this is what natural born citizen means. As far as I know, I've looked into this. So, you know, call in if you know of a Supreme Court case that defines it. I'd love to hear it. Anybody out there. And since it hasn't been defined, we can't say that there's actually a precedent. Just because everyone who has been presidents thus far happens to have been born on American soil doesn't mean that that's the rule. It just means everyone fits into that rule if we decide to make it that. So to say we haven't, that we already have this precedent, we already have this rule, and we're going to be changing it, I don't really think is what's going on. It hasn't been defined. I find that the best way to do it is to let the voters decide.
Yeah,
I really do.
If the voters had selected John McCain, would that really have been the reason we opposed him?
Or would that have changed the rule? Would that have changed the rule then to be any in the United States or any United States territory by his becoming president, us as the citizens of the United States who are allowed to vote for president or vote for the electors that then elect the president, have we thus by our vote changed what natural born citizen means ourselves? Aren't we the government and don't we get to decide?
It's certainly an interesting question. And the precedent argument, I hadn't heard, Ron. So it's, you know, it's one that we may have to decide as a country if Ted Cruz.
One could argue that it has been decided kind of in terms of the presidential succession. There are certain people who are left out of meetings on certain classified meetings in the line of succession from the president, you know, because if God forbid something happens to the president and the vice president, there's a certain number of people that goes down the line who would become president. There are very high level meetings that those people go to know about our national security information. Certain people, for example, the Secretary of State under Clinton, she was born in Austria. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. So she was not in some of those meetings because she could not have succeeded to the presidency under the line of succession as not being a natural born citizen.
Interesting.
So there may be some definitions there. It's one of those things where very smart legal scholars have written papers on both sides or all sides of this. So for us to say, here's the bright line rule, this is what it is, we're kind of fooling ourselves.
Yeah, and for me personally, I'm not willing to disqualify every child born on a military base simply because it wasn't, you know, within the continental United States.
I also don't like it being used, like I said, for code for saying you're not American.
Right. But I welcome everybody's opinion, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are more people who think that it should be an issue, and you're welcome to certainly call in. But Ron, thank you for the precedent argument, and thanks for hanging out with us there in California. Do we have time for one more?
Oh, sure. Yes.
All right. Let's check in with Tim, listening on WCPT in Chicago. Tim, your thoughts on Ted Cruz?
Well, I actually share probably a dramatic amount of agreement with Ted Cruz's religious points of view. But I have a problem with him wanting to become a politician, to force your will on other people. To me, I think is problematic. I can believe as strongly as I can in how I believe in Christ, how I believe in my neighborhood, how I believe in society. But when I become a politician, elect me, and I'm going to make you live like me, I just have a problem with that. I have a problem with that on the progressive side. I have a problem with that on the conservative side. I have a problem with that on the religious side. I mean, look at Islam. I mean, it wants to force its will on everybody.
I think some sects of Islam might just as some Christian sects do. I don't know on the progressive side, and maybe I am being one-sided, of progressives who say that they want to force the entire country to think like them.
Well, I mean, I think that's quite obvious that there are ideologues that want to become politically powerful so that they can lord their will. You will be this way or else. And I think that Ted Cruz borderlines on that. I would say that there are quite a few, I mean, you know, as an ex-Californian, I
Tim,
think
we are
from California. Like
we are running out of time, but there's no borderline about it. He was worked with Paul Weyrich, who said flat out, we are talking about Christianizing America. We are talking about simply spreading the gospel in a political context. There's no gray area there. So thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Danielle here with Shano, filling in for Tom this week while he is on vacation. And I don't think it would be a Shano and Danielle fill-in if at least once we didn't talk to the brilliant Ian Millhiser, constitutional policy analyst at Center for American Progress, justice editor over at thinkprogress.org, and author of Injustices, which you can get right now if you go over to Amazon. Amazing new book about the Supreme Court's nearly unbroken history of comforting the comfortable and afflicting the afflicted. Ian, it is always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's great to be back. Thanks so much.
There has been so much in the news today, a lot of it out of Texas. Of course, Ted Cruz and the Supreme Court trying to decide whether or not Texas should print Confederate flag license plates. But before we get to that, you had some news on their, as you called it, non-decision on voter ID?
That's right. So we got some potentially bad news today, although given the court that we have, it's probably for the best that they did what they did. So there was a challenge to Wisconsin's voter ID law. And voter ID laws are these laws that disenfranchise thousands of people based on the need to stop an illusionary form of voter fraud that doesn't actually exist. So this law was challenged. The challenge went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court announced today that they won't take that case. So the bad news is that means that the law goes into effect. Thousands of people probably won't get to vote in the next Wisconsin election, and the law won't accomplish anything beyond that. But the good news, if there is a silver lining, is that this court has been, and I have a whole chapter in Injustice talking about this problem, has been so hostile to voting rights that we probably weren't going to get a good decision out of the Supreme Court anyway on this issue, and it might be better for them to do nothing than to say something and really invigorate these voter ID laws.
It's pretty scary when disenfranchising thousands of voters, as will be the inevitable result, is the better outcome that we could have hoped for from this conservative court.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a mess. I mean, when you look at their record on voting rights, this is, of course, the same Supreme Court that struck down a key part of the Voting Rights Act. This is the second time that voter ID has been up in front of them. In the last opinion they had considering a voter ID law, they allowed the law to go into effect even though they weren't able to cite a single example of in-person voter fraud. They will cite one example, just one example, in the last 140 years.
Wow.
So, you know, these aren't, you know, you don't need a lot of evidence to get a voter suppression law past these guys.
Now, they decided not to hear that case, but they did listen to arguments on whether or not Texas must issue Confederate flag license plates. This is a rather interesting case because it doesn't break down, I think, as most people would immediately assume. Can you tell us a little bit about the background of this Confederate flag case?
Sure. So this is a really hard case. And I mean, I'm serious about that. Like, I mean, I struggle with what the correct answer is here. So Texas has a program where if you want a specialty license plate that will tout whatever message you want, and there are messages ranging from fight terrorism to, like, I think there's a specialty license plate for someone's chicken shack that you can get in Texas if you really want it. So there's a broad range of messages here. And, the Sons of Confederate Veterans wanted to have a specialty plate that incorporates the Confederate battle flag. So what you have here is you have a deeply offensive symbol. You have a symbol, the symbol of a traitorous regime that existed for the purpose of maintaining slavery. And Texas said, no, you can't have that specialty plate. And the question now is whether or not the First Amendment steps in and says, no, Texas isn't allowed to discriminate against these folks. Normally we understand the First Amendment to protect, you know, to especially protect offensive speech. But there are unique questions about the fact that since these are government-issued plates, the First Amendment may not apply with the same force here.
It really is an interesting case. I will say I agree with you on it being difficult to figure out what the right answer is. We debated it in our house for quite a few minutes trying to figure out what our own opinions were. I'm from Florida, where a lot of these arguments have been heard all the way back through the 90s because they have all of the pro-life movement plates but don't have the opposing view of a pro-choice plate. It's just surprising to me that Texas wouldn't be all in favor of a Confederate flag license plate. This issue is just so confusing about whether or not a license plate is private speech or public speech. Is there any precedent here to go on? Any opinion, any indication of what the justices might rule?
Sure, sure. So there are two there's an older case and a newer case. The older case is very good for the people who want the flag to be on the plate. It was a case involving the New Hampshire license plates. New Hampshire state motto was live free or die. And there was a person who didn't want that message, live free or die, to be displaced. They wanted to put a piece of tape over it. And the Supreme Court, they said that they have a First Amendment right not to be forced to drive around broadcasting this message that they don't necessarily embrace. So that seems to suggest that the license plates are individual speech. They aren't government speech, because how else could you have a First Amendment right to change your license plate if it wasn't your speech? There's a later case, though, involving monuments, where there were several monuments erected in the park. There was this church called Summum, which wanted to erect its version of the Ten Commandments, basically, in the park. And the city said no, and the Supreme Court said that was okay. They said that those monuments are government speech. So, you know, the question here is whether we look at the older case dealing with license plates or we look at the newer case dealing with monuments. I'm inclined to think that the older case is the stronger precedent here and that the people who want to display the flag should probably win, but it's not easy.
No, it's certainly not. I mean, if it's public speech, you posed the question in your article over at Think Progress, you know, if we do a pro-troops or, remember 9/11 plate, do we also have to put up a, you know, yay Al-Qaeda, yay terrorism plate? Where does that issue fall? I have to say that I struggled with this one, and I'm still not sure where my opinion falls.
Yeah, no, if Texas loses here, it's going to be a bonanza for trolls. Because, like, you know, not only are you going to have people who want to do obviously offensive things like a swastika license plate, but you're going to have people just want to do ridiculous license plates. You know, Texas has a plate that says stop child abuse. So if the First Amendment applies, the First Amendment forbids viewpoint discrimination. So that means that I could drive down to Texas and say, I want you to give me a plate that says child abuse is awesome. And that's what I want to drive around with, is this plate that, you know, seems like it's a state-issued plate about how awesome child abuse is.
How would this affect, you know, like Florida passed, I believe, a state constitutional amendment saying that no more of these specialty plates could be created, coincidentally, after they allowed, like, the pro-life plates. Right. How would this case affect something like that?
Well, and that's a really good point. I mean, this actually came up at oral argument. You know, what this is really about, and Chief Justice Roberts called the state out, that the state's interest in this is money. You know, the state's interest in it is that people pay a premium for these plates, and, you know, they can raise a lot of money by selling these plates. And, you know, setting aside the First Amendment issue, that's probably a good thing if they can raise money that way. You know, if our taxes can be marginally lower because people are voluntarily giving the government money that in order to get a specialty place, then everyone.
It's certainly an interesting case. Ian, thank you very much for breaking it down for us.
Sure thing, no, thank you.
Ian Millhiser, hang on one second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Ian, who will be on to talk about that amazing new book next week with Tom. Be sure not to miss it. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program.
You can't believe we've got Ted Cruz running for president and Confederate license plates. Come on.
Oh, never mind. Okay. Lots of crazy news out of Texas. That's a lot of craziness.
That's usually Florida's thing.
That's a lot of craziness out of one state. Let's check in with some of our Free Speech TV viewers, starting with David, also in Texas. Troop, Texas? Is that how you say the name of your city, David?
That's correct.
All right. And your thoughts about Ted Cruz?
Well, I'm afraid that it's something in the water now. You know, Ted Cruz is not the only guy that the Comedy Central has a time with. Louis Gohmert is also in this county where I live. And, you know, it's more than a joke with these guys. I wanted to remind you that George W. Bush came from here and that he had a... He didn't have to know anything. In fact, who he ran against that I loved, Ann Richards, said in the campaign that poor George, he was born with a silver foot in his mouth.
Yes, I remember that. You know, I often feel the same way about Florida, David. Maybe it's just those of us who are born and raised in really conservative states that you kind of look around and say, you know, wow, I can't believe all those people or all those stories or all that craziness came from my area.
And the thing about Ted Cruz, he's a good deal brighter than George
W. He is very smart. Don't underestimate
George W. Bush. He may portray himself as the outsider, but he's not. He went to those elite universities. Not that that necessarily makes you an incredibly smart person, but he does have the educated background. You know, he was Solicitor General. He's an attorney. He is argued before the Supreme Court. He does have a brain, which makes him doubly scary to me.
David, what's the local opinion of this presidential run? Is it a lot of people, you know, two thumbs up, or are they looking at it as a joke?
You know, this area right here finances these kind of guys and helps put them in office. You know, this was the one county that they came to, that Sarah Palin came here to raise money.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's here, but I'm afraid that taking it lightly and just preaching to the choir with this and joking about it minimizes, and like the man said, this guy is smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's got smart guys. George had Karl Rove, mm-hmm. you know, and that was the guidance. He called him the intellect.
Yeah, it's Bush's brain, the book.
Right, and remember, Ted Cruz is one of the individuals who helped Bush get elected with the help of Paul Weyrich, which is just what our earlier guest was talking about. I mean, the connections, it's not a Glenn Beck chalkboard. These are direct lines, direct connections to some groups that should give us a serious pause about his candidacy and to not take it so lightly. He is a very smart man with a lot of powerful people and powerful organizations in his corner. And we need to remember that. But David, thank you very much for the call. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and I, Danielle, sitting in for Tom today. Big thanks to Ian Millhiser of the Center for American Progress. Seriously, you want to tune in next week for Tom's interview with Ian about that book, Injustices. Ian is brilliant and does amazing work.
And I'm reading it, and there was an incredible amount of work put into this book.
Yes, wasn't it like
43 pages of end notes.
Yes. So, and you can order that now on Amazon. But, this other news out of Texas, before the Supreme Court on whether or not a Confederate license plate is public speech or private speech, speech.
It's government speech versus private speech.
Right.
So if it's government speech, the government can have an opinion. So that I think we kind of didn't really flesh that out as much in the first segment. If it's government speech, the government can have an opinion, and it doesn't need to put the other side out there. So therefore, it could say yes to pro-life plates and no to Planned Parenthood plates if it's considered government speech. Think, for example, if the DEA was going to start a Just Say No to Drugs campaign. Imagine that. And they printed up a bunch of pamphlets saying how bad marijuana is for you. They are not under the obligation to also print a bunch of pamphlets saying the medicinal purposes for marijuana. They don't have to give both sides. We elect a government. The government's technically supposed to be us. The government can take a policy position. So if it's considered government speech, if the plate is government speech, and this is what Texas is arguing, saying these are our plates, this is the state talking, we can decide what to say. On the other hand, if it's private speech, then the government can't regulate. It can't tell one type of speech that is okay and another type it isn't. Does that make sense now?
It makes sense, and it makes it very difficult to form an opinion on, because let's face it, I don't want there to be Confederate license plates.
Right.
I don't want somebody to take it to the extreme and create, as Ian said, swastika
license
plates.
Well, the issue is, I think the problem we're coming up against is that it is private speech, but then because it's on a state plate, it's a state endorsement of that speech.
Right.
There's kind of an implied endorsement, so it's kind of a hybrid of both speeches. And that's probably what's so difficult about it.
Yeah, because, I mean, I certainly don't want limitations on free speech, even when it's speech I disagree with, including Confederate flags.
Right. What about profanity?
Right.
You know, these are questions that we should be asking Tom's callers. You know, what do you think? What if a state said, no, you can only have Planned Parenthood plates, but you can't have choose life plates?
Right.
You know, what kind of limitations do you see? What kind of plates, what would your position be on this?
Exactly. So,
and of course, Ted Cruz.
Yes.
It's going to be Anything Goes Ted Cruz today.
And we do actually have somebody who wants to weigh in on Ted Cruz's Super PAC.
Cool.
So let's check in with Andy listening on Sirius in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. Andy, thank you for listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
You wanted a name for Ted Cruz's Super PAC. I think there ought to be a generic name for all the Republican presidential candidates' super PACs. We need to stop calling them super PACs and start calling them stupor PACs, as in drunken stupor. So you would have the Ted Cruz super PAC.
Well,
now I don't want you to think that I'm taking Ted Cruz's presidential candidacy lightly by making a joke like that.
Hey, I think there are so many stories in the news. There's so many issues that, yes, we have to take seriously, but that doesn't mean we can't laugh a little bit. In today's news cycle, if we didn't all laugh a little bit, how on earth would we get through it?
Yeah, okay. One more thing I'd like to make. I listened to the Rush Limbaugh show fairly often too, because you got to listen to both sides, okay, to get a true opinion. Rush often says, only listen to me. You only need me. Mm-hmm. I don't hear you or Tom Hartman or anybody else saying that. But I think the left-wing talk show host could take a cue from people like Rush Limbaugh. He talks often about the Clinton regime, and he talks about the Obama regime
mm-hmm.
as though they're dictatorial type things. I don't think the question should be, what does a Ted Cruz presidency look like? What would the Ted Cruz regime look like?
I love it.
I love it, Andy. I will use that for the rest of the day.
The Ted Cruz regime.
Thanks to Andy in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. I often don't like playing politics on the same Frank Luntz level that the Republicans do. But in the same respect, if you don't, how on earth are we ever going to beat their messaging?
Right.
You know, it's like
what
this,
they are selling is nonsense. They just box it up really pretty.
Right. It's like this argument of whether or not to say Obamacare or Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
Why have we let them turn the president's name into a bad word?
And no matter what, no matter how it's couched, if you call it the Affordable Care Act, people call in saying, why aren't you calling it Obamacare? Obamacare.
Yeah, there's people who want to weigh in on both sides.
And if you say Obamacare, well, that's what they use as a pejorative. You should call it the Affordable Care Act. You know, all that messaging does matter. It's just a matter of coming up with what the best messaging is.
Right. But I think Ted Cruz regime, Rand Paul regime,
absolutely.
All the rest of it, I think is quite
like
fitting, especially with the changes that they want to make to this country as evidenced in Bruce Williams' research. So brilliant, Andy. Thank you very much. Let's check in with Grace watching on Free Speech TV in Los Gatos, California. Thanks for watching, Grace.
Thank you. Good to see you guys. I did want to weigh in on the Ted Cruz thing because my father was an immigrant, and I had to apply for dual citizenship. Even though I was born in the United States, I wasn't automatically an English citizen. I had to go apply for it. But Ted Cruz was not born in the United States, and the Constitution does state that you have to be a natural-born citizen. And a lot of people say, well, we don't really know what that means, but we do. I think it was defined in the 14th Amendment, and also that's what brought about this new epithet of anchor babies, children that are born in the United States from immigrant parents are automatically U.S. citizens. And they are more eligible to run for president than Ted Cruz is. Also, Ted Cruz is not, as far as I can find, has not renounced his Canadian citizenship.
I believe he has actually gone out and renounced it in response to Donald Trump and the rest of the birthers going after his citizenship. But Grace, I'm sorry, we're just out of time. Thank you very much for watching.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Confederate license plates, Ted Cruz. What are some good things Texas has to offer? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano, filling in for Tom today while he is on a much-deserved vacation. Check out his upcoming event at Sister Giant over at the Tom Hartman website. Lots of calls that want to weigh in on Ted Cruz and Confederate flag license plates.
Cool.
And all kinds of good stuff. Let's check in with William, watching on Free Speech TV in Marangon, Louisiana. I probably just butchered the name of that city. Did I, William?
No, you did great.
Okay.
I'm for the Confederate flag license plate.
Okay. Why is that?
Because it would let me know who the Klan is and who the George Zimmermans are around here. And I know to stay clear of all their racist, bigoted selves, you know. And I know who was going to kill the little black children and who was going to beat me up as a gay man, you know.
Well, I certainly wouldn't say that everybody with a Confederate flag license plate is going to go around killing people, but I get the gist of your comment.
It's kind of like a scarlet letter for bigots.
Yeah, it certainly
it's
is.
It's just saying, I'm a bigot, And I'm proud of it because I put it on my plate.
See, as much as I dislike the Confederate flag, for me, I keep going back to the free speech issue. You know, I certainly don't like the Klan.
Right.
Well, but they have a right to speak.
ACLU defended the Nazis marching in Skokie. Is this similar?
Yeah, it's interesting. Let's check in.
Actually, I get more upset at the fact that they can put, you know, choose life plates out as opposed and not put out the other side.
Yeah, I do too, because as much as you might disagree with what the symbol means, you can at least argue that the Confederate flag is part of our history, especially in the South. But to put out one side of a political argument and not the other.
Right. And I think it's even further than it's putting out one side and suppressing the other.
As occurred in Florida.
That's what bothers me.
Yeah.
So, again, back to a free speech argument.
I would love to hear people's opinions on this because I could probably be swayed to either side of the argument. I'm really on the fence on this one.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with deciding on air.
Right. Thank you, William, for listening there in Louisiana. Let's check in with Lawrence, listening on Sirius in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Lawrence from Lawrenceville, how are you today?
Yes, I'm great, and I'm excited about the Ted Cruz candidacy. I guess because when I hear liberals get up in arms about a candidate, it tells me that he's the right guy because he believes in limited government. And Danielle, I know you think that if Ted Cruz is elected, somehow we're going to become a theocracy. You know that's loony at best.
Well, he specifically said it. I mean, did you listen to his speech today wanting to bring Christianity back, wanting to abolish the IRS? I mean, you don't have to put words
Danielle,
in his mouth.
Danielle, you can't be that naive. Oh. I agree with abolishing the IRS.
All right. Okay. All right. Let's go. Let's go to Ted Cruz's father's own mouth talking about anointing the kings to dominate the government. So we'll let Rafael Cruz explain it to us.
All right. Go for
and
it.
I don't think is he naive too?
Maybe. It's an anointing as king. And God has given you an anointing to go to the battlefield. And what's the battlefield? The battlefield is the marketplace. To go to the marketplace and occupy the land. To go to the marketplace and take dominion. And if you recall, we talked about the fact that that dominion is not just in the church. That dominion is over every area. Society, education, government. Economics.
That sounded pretty clear to me.
Yeah. And do you want to hear the blessing of Ted Cruz?
Certainly.
Now, here we go.
Father, we believe that indeed no weapon formed against him will prosper. And every tongue that rises up against him in judgment will be condemned. For this is the heritage of the servant of the Lord. And his righteousness is of you, Lord. Father, you said that, and we believe that today. Father, we ask today that you would give him the tongue of the learned to speak that word. Father, we ask that your blessing would come upon our nation. Father, those like our senator, Father, that they would receive these words.
There we go.
You know, and whether or not Ted Cruz can create a theocracy on his own is certainly a bit.
Sure.
You know,
there are checks
extreme.
And balances. There are checks and balances.
But
absolutely.
That people like him want to create a theocracy and would work, are working, have been working to do so. Yeah.
Using religion to suppress same-sex marriage, using religion for all kinds of bigoted reasons, using religion to tell women how they can control their bodies, using religion, you know, putting up 10 commandments in government buildings, you know, complaining about a war on Christmas, all of this. These are all essentially trying to set up a Christian theocracy.
Yeah, I'm telling you, go over to Talk to Action, check out Bruce Wilson's argument called Ted Cruz worked with religious right founder Paul Weyrich to elect George W. Bush. It'll be in our newsletter, I'm sure, as well, over at tomhartman.com as well.
And just because liberals are all up in arms about a candidate is not because we're worried. It's because we need to be here quickly to be able to tell you what this candidate is about.
Hey, based on
really
that
are.
Logic, they must be really worried about Hillary Clinton.
Right. Really. But to put out the information and not let all of his you know, flowery speeches, he's actually a great orator. He really can be a compelling orator. To not let that go unchallenged.
Yeah. My point is that liberals can't pretend that candidates like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul have no chance because they are serious candidates. As much as it's fun and easy to laugh about them and to make jokes, they are like a walking setup for comedians.
Yeah.
But they really do have a serious threat, and we need to be mindful of that.
And no matter what, if he's running for president, one of the things will happen, even if he isn't the nominee, that he's going to push other nominees to adopt some of his positions, that there's a kind of an ideological battle that goes on during the primary process. And if he's able to impart on the eventual nominee some of these ideas, we need to flesh them out, say what they really are, what they really mean for whomever the candidate really is, so that we are armed with the information necessary to beat them.
Right.
That's why we're up in arms.
Right. And I'm sorry, I do think that they want to create a theocracy. I think it
oh,
is.
Don't say you're sorry.
It is their. Yeah. Okay, I'm not sorry.
Okay, there you go.
I think it is their biggest goal. Let's check in with Terrell, listening on iHeartRadio in Denver, Colorado. You have a name for Ted Cruz's super PAC.
Yes, it could be called Big Ignorance.
Big Ignorance. The Big Ig, like the Big Dig?
Yeah, that's right. Big Ignorance or Patriot United or Lunatics Unlimited. I mean, that's tough to make.
Lunatics Unlimited is pretty good.
I like
pretty
that.
Good, Terrell. I like it. I think so far you are a winner. Thank you for listening there in Denver, Colorado. Let's
but
check.
It's the Lunatics Unlimited Stupor Pack.
Yeah, let's check
to put
in.
Two together.
Yes, the Lunatics Unlimited Stupor Pack. That's a mouthful of
it
the
is.
Ted Cruz regime.
Of the. We're going to adopt everyone's suggestions.
This
today.
Is going to get really long. It's going to be like the game of Operator.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's check in with Chris, listening on Sirius in Dallas, Texas, from Ted Cruz Estate. Chris, what are your thoughts on the Ted Cruz presidency?
Regime.
I think at least a half hour to tell you that.
At least a half an hour? Chris, you still there?
Uh-oh.
Chris, I'm going to put you on hold because I think maybe you hit your phone on mute and give you a second there. But we'll check in with Brian, watching on Free Speech TV in North Carolina. Brian, you had some thoughts on Ted Cruz.
Yes, ma'am. How are you guys today?
We are doing very well, thank you.
Oh, I love it when you and Shannon are running the show. I absolutely love it. It's always fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, my take on Ted Cruz, excuse me, let him run. I mean, I don't want to run, you know, the bottoms and the filth again like we've been doing in politics. I'd like to see it class up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let him run. Let his merit speak for himself. I'm sure he's been out there long enough for us to make an intelligent decision. However, my twist on that is that a lot of these people that are out here saying things in the political spectrum, aren't they a makeup of us? Aren't we the larger problem?
How so?
And people in support of them. That's how they come to power. Someone's supporting them. Someone's backing them, the money or what have you. Someone takes care of their view.
Well, do you think, Brian, that maybe people like that coming to power, either they really do represent the majority of voters in their district, or, in my opinion, what may be more likely, they represent the more powerful voters in their district or the more powerful voters in our country,
the more powerful money generators for the ads.
I'm inclined to agree with that, but I also think that it's by what we don't do that also gives them that power.
And what aren't
you know
we
what
doing?
I mean? So it starts with the electorate to a point as well.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly have to get out and vote. I loved, even if it was an offhand comment, I absolutely loved President Obama's comment last week about mandatory voting, including that it probably made conservative heads explode all across the country. But it not necessarily that voting should be mandatory, but that 100% of our electorate voting would have incredible benefits to our country. And if people still wanted to elect someone like Ted Cruz with 100% of voters participating, then so be it. That would be their choice. Yes. I might renounce my citizenship.
Right. Then we bear the brunt of that. Then I'm willing to accept that.
Right.
But it's the laziness and, you know, the lack of participation, that's what's killing us more than anything. It just gives them a bigger platform.
Maybe people like Ted Cruz, and I mean this sincerely, as scary as it is, gives voters that believe that similar things something to be passionate about. You know, he is a great speaker,
but as Paul Weyrich said, Ted Cruz's buddy, as the voting population goes down, their leverage does go up.
Yep.
So I do agree completely.
But, Brian, all wonderful points. Thanks for watching there in North Carolina.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
What would you call the Ted Cruz super PAC, and should we take him seriously? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program.
Jim has
here.
Some ideas for the super PAC name.
Jim has some ideas, but
yeah,
he's...
they are and super PAC.
Those are the contributions for Mr. Javinsky.
Well, he said that he had some, but then we'd have to bleep him. So I put them out there for you.
Yeah, we have to get Jim a
we
better
got a
mic
up from
there.
Jim.
Yes, thank you, Jim. Let's check in with Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Michael, thanks for watching on DirecTV.
Hey, Danielle, Shano, Troy, and Jim. Okay. Danielle, this will take 20 seconds.
Go for it.
Ted Cruz's super PAC should be called Pac-Men. We all remember one of the first video games, Pac-Man, where the goal is to consume everything. This is where we are going. The top 1/10,000th of 1% have an agenda to consume all power and money, and it's actually embarrassing for a man like Ted Cruz to be used as a pawn for these men who they're just going to throw him away once he's useless. What do you think?
I love everything up until Ted Cruz being a pawn. He's certainly the Pac-Man. I think the wealthy definitely want to.
The question is, who's Inky Blinky and
who's Inky Blinky and what was the third one?
Clyde.
Yeah. But I don't think he is just a pawn. I actually, he is.
Really?
Yeah. While I do think that out of a lot of other.
Scott Walker.
Yeah, Scott Walker, totally Koch brothers pawn. Ted Cruz is very intelligent, and I would have agreed with you yesterday. But doing more research and learning more about his background.
What he's done in his background to get to this point.
Yeah.
And he's also quite headstrong. I mean, think about shutting down the government. He actually essentially went from the Senate over to the House, convinced extremists, Republicans in the House to shut down the government.
Yeah.
I mean, he was being called the Speaker of the House as a senator. So he doesn't necessarily go along with the flow. So he doesn't seem like a manipulable person.
He's a pawn, I'll say that I have not yet figured out who he's a pawn for.
Yeah.
He's not a pawn to the Koch brothers. He's not a pawn to the typical Republican Party bigwigs that back people like Jeb Bush. If he's a pawn of anybody, it is the religious right. And it is the religious right that has gained quite a foothold in this country. If you look at what has happened to our school system, if you look at what's happened to women's rights, if you look at, you know, these really expensive legal cases against gay marriage, it takes some serious money to bring those cases and sue states to try and take people's rights away. There's some serious power behind all that. So if he's a pawn of anybody, that's probably who he's a pawn of. What do you think about that, Michael?
I agree. But what's his net worth? What's he worth? 250 mil?
I don't know.
Even 500 million? That's nothing. I mean, that's nothing compared to what some people are worth on this world scale. So he's nobody. He is nobody financial-wise. Would you agree?
Yeah, but I don't think he needs his own money. I think he's got Jerry Falwell and the likes behind him.
Ted Cruz's net worth, $3.5 million.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, it is pittance compared to even some of the other fellow senators and members of Congress.
As a Solicitor General,
exactly.
It's harder to
exactly.
get a big message.
He's a nobody.
Well, but it's a great name, Ted Cruz, Pac-Man, because they want to consume everything. That's certainly a great line for the 1% in general, Michael. Brilliant, as always. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Imperial Beach, California. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. Me and Shano filling in for Tom today. Let's check in with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, free-don.org and goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Victoria, what's going on today?
Well, this is the fifth anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's signature health care law. And the Obama administration, in the form of Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Matthews-Burwell, announced today that a massive expansion of insurance programs like Medicaid and a drop in emergency room visits saved hospitals at least $7.4 billion over the last year. They say that with millions more people covered under Obamacare last year, hospitals faced fewer bills from patients who lacked insurance and therefore couldn't pay. They also say that hospitals saw fewer emergency room visits, and that rack up far higher costs and often leave hospitals with the tab. And that's known as uncompensated care. That dropped by a fifth nationwide in 2014. Now, nearly 70% of those savings came from states that have expanded the eligibility for Medicaid under Medicare. So the 29 states with Medicaid expansion saved a total of $5 billion compared with $2.4 billion saved in states that did not expand the program. So what they're trying to do is to ratchet up the pressure on those states that have not expanded Medicaid.
So twice as much savings in states that simply wanted to provide insurance to everyone, even through Medicaid.
That's correct.
Wow. That's a big difference.
It is a big difference. And she announced that today with the Democratic governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, who has fought to expand Medicaid in his state, but has so far failed to do so.
Was there any focus on, I don't know if it was actual news or rumors that I heard of, the White House using pressure in terms of federal charity dollars to get the other states to expand Medicaid?
I don't have that information.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something we'll have to watch.
Yeah, have to watch that.
So what else is going on?
Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, opened the first major campaign of the 2016 presidential season today with a feisty kickoff speech at Liberty University, which, of course, founded by the late Reverend Jerry Falwell, saying he's going to devote himself to reigniting the promise of America. He spoke a great deal about his religious faith, his father's Cuban roots, and his conservative credentials, saying for so many Americans, the promise of America seems more and more distant. He asked his very enthusiastic crowd to imagine a president that finally secures the borders. Imagine a simple flat tax. Imagine abolishing the IRS, he said.
Yes, and then asked for everybody's cell phone numbers.
I don't think he did that.
Yes, he asked everybody to text him the word Constitution, which is essentially just a ploy to get everybody's cell phone numbers.
Well, I guess then that way you can get that that small money,
yes.
Which, of course, is one of the things that he is going to want to do, because the Koch brothers at the moment are more affiliated with some of the other candidates, interestingly enough.
Yes, like Scott Walker, I believe.
Like Scott Walker, exactly. Yeah.
So what else is going on?
Consumer advocacy groups like Friends of the Earth, Consumers Union, Food and Water Watch, Green America, the Pesticide Action Network and others are asking Burger King, Wendy's, Subway and Dunkin' Donuts for commitments not to sell the genetically engineered apples and potatoes that the Department of Agriculture approved for consumption last week.
Wow. I had heard about the apples. I didn't hear about the potatoes.
Oh, yes. Potatoes that don't go brown.
Genetically engineering our food so we don't know how to tell once it's turned bad.
Yeah. Well, no, it hasn't actually turned bad. It's just, yeah. It's called innate, this potato. And anyway, so according to Friends of the Earth, McDonald's and Gerber have said they have no plans to sell the genetically modified apples. Friends of the Earth's tech director said, we anticipate that other leading companies will follow suit, particularly those that market apples to children who are most vulnerable to possible health risks. Now, the USDA says that these genetically engineered apples are, and the potatoes are as safe and nutritious as their conventional counterparts.
Hmm. Well, we'll have to see if those other groups join on and, you know, take part in the voluntary GMO labeling or GMO abstinence movement, if you will?
We'll see. Hillary Clinton said today at an event sponsored by the Center for American Progress that income inequality and wage stagnation are problems that go hand in hand. She said the nation needs to find creative solutions to improve job opportunities and living conditions in America's cities. She said that many people are moving back into cities and the nation's policies need to be updated, quote, in a way that lifts everybody up. She says many cities are divided along economic lines and the country needs partnerships between private and public sectors to improve social mobility.
Well, it sounds like a great speech. Any more news in the underground discussions about when she's going to announce her presidency?
We don't hear any details at all. All you hear about is April. I mean, when it comes to Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, the word is the 7th of April, so that's definite. So I'm guessing not the 7th of April then for Hillary Clinton.
Not the 7th. Well, we'll look for it on other days. In the few seconds we have left, any other quick news points?
Yes, 367 members of Congress, bipartisan, have written to President Obama warning that lawmakers must be satisfied that any Iranian nuclear agreement must foreclose any pathway to a bomb before they lift sanctions against Tehran.
So again, undermining the president's, John Kerry's negotiations, discussions with any Iranian leaders?
But they're not foreclosing the option of an agreement. They're just saying they need to be involved.
Well, I suppose that's better than sending them a traitorous letter. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, thank you so much, Victoria.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, sitting in for Tom today while he is on a much-deserved vacation. And we told you about one of the cases before the Supreme Court earlier and talked about Confederate flag license plates. But there was also another case before the court today. And it involved a woman by the name of Teresa Sheehan. And here to tell you about Teresa and about why this case is important is Susan Meisner, Disability Counsel with the ACLU, ACLU.org. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today and for all your work on such an important issue.
Thank you for covering this topic.
Oh, absolutely. It needs to be talked about. Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, we all know those names, but maybe we're not as familiar with Milton Hall, James Boyd, Tanisha Anderson, and you're here to tell us why.
Thank you. Yes. So the number of people with disabilities who the police shoot every year, from all the numbers that we can gather, are about 50%.
Wow.
It varies. The data isn't formally collected, so this has come from really some very good media people who've done Public Records Act requests, media surveys, And they found that about half, it's between 40% in some areas, up to 80% in other areas, of police shootings and killings are people with disabilities, most of them psychiatric disabilities. And Teresa Sheehan is one of those people. What is different about her case is that she actually survived the shooting.
Despite being shot five times?
Five times, one of them in the head.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what happened in her case, she's a person who has a psychiatric disability. She was living in a group home for people with psychiatric disabilities, and a social worker there realized that she was not doing well. She'd been unable to leave her room. She didn't want to talk with anyone. She was very aggressive with the social worker when he tried to come in. So the social worker called the police and said, "I need help getting Ms. Sheehan to the hospital." The police arrived. They knocked on her door, and she said, "You can't come in here without a warrant," and brandished a knife at them. They retreated. She closed the door behind them and went back to her bed, as for all we can tell.
Mm-hmm.
They appropriately called for backup. In situations like that, if you haven't thought about this beforehand, before entering, it makes sense for you to calm down, sit tight, wait for experts in negotiating and talking with people who are in psychiatric crisis to arrive. But they didn't. Even though they called for backup and backup was on its way, they decided to re-enter Ms. Sheehan's room with guns drawn. She came at them again, and they shot her five times.
It is absolutely stunning in this case and in several other cases that we just mentioned, those names. These are police that were aware of the disability, were aware that they were dealing with somebody who had a psychiatric disability, and yet still chose to use lethal force before non-lethal options. And that's essentially what this case is about?
Yes, it is partly about the choice to use lethal force, but it's also about the Americans with Disabilities Act and whether police are obligated to go by and obey the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act when they're arresting or detaining people with disabilities.
Now, obviously, people who are opposed to such a requirement, in this case, I have so many notes in front of me. Which state was it that requested and said that cops are exempt from the American Disabilities Act?
So in the Fifth Circuit, there was actually a split within the Fifth Circuit that one case said, no, they don't have to. Another case, it actually dialed back from that. What is ironic here is that the city and county of San Francisco itself has backed down from its original petition to the court, which asked whether the ADA applied. And they say, oh, yes, the ADA does apply.
What do you say to people who argue that there's no way police could make such accommodations and that they couldn't follow these guidelines, that they have to first protect themselves?
Well, the ADA already has an exception when people are actively in danger. It's called the direct threat exception. And it would have applied if, for example, the police came upon a person in a street who was waving a knife at people and running towards people.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just need to keep everyone safe. That's the overriding concern. But our position is, and we believe the law says, that when there isn't an immediate crisis, the police have an obligation to follow procedures that have been shown and proven to not only keep the people with disabilities safe, but the police and others safer as well.
Now, we've heard so many times recently of police being notified. You know, these aren't as you said, somebody, the police coming across somebody in the middle of the street wielding a knife. This is police being called specifically to deal with an individual that is having some type of psychiatric event, some type of breakdown. And their first response is to use force instead of these standard procedures. How do we bring light to this? How do we explain to people that the police should be handling this a different way?
Well, I think one group of people we want to reach out to, frankly, are police departments.
Mm-hmm.
There are really very few people who take any pleasure in shooting another human being. And I think that police officers want the training, want the options that get them out of that situation. There are these programs called crisis intervention trainings, and they work with police to understand what is happening with someone who's in a psychiatric crisis, connect them with mental health experts, and when that connection continues so that they can draw on the mental health experts when they've got a situation that is difficult, it shows that it not only reduces fatalities and conflicts, but interestingly enough, it also reduces the number of people who go to jails and saves enormous costs to the county.
Absolutely. Any? Were you in the court today? Is there any indication based on questioning or opinions of which way the court may lean or rule on this case?
I was not in the court today. I was not able to be there. We have gotten one report that the justices were not pleased that the city and county of San Francisco changed their position and said, well, no, of course, now we believe that the ADA applies, because that turned the case essentially into a factual question of whether the police were reasonable in this circumstance. And that's not the kind of case that the Supreme Court takes.
Right. They're supposed to have a case in controversy there.
Exactly. So we asked in our amicus brief that they dismiss the petition as improvidently granted, which is lawyer speak for saying, you know, this was a mistake to take this case.
So it shouldn't even be a question. Police should absolutely have to act in accordance with the ADA.
That's our position, yes.
Well, I think that is an excellent position. Susan, thank you so much for explaining this to us and for the amazing work that you do.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Susan Meisner of the ACLU Disability Council, ACLU.org. You can read more about this case over there. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Still lots and lots of people who want
to applaud you. I did it during the little turnaround there. Case in controversy. You just like Tom should have his honorary law degree. I think you're working towards one yourself.
I happen to live with someone who
knows.
Who knows a few things about the law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I hear it a bit, huh?
Yeah. So, yeah, that was exactly it. Because what she's explaining there is if both sides, first of all, when the court first took the case, you had two sides that disagreed on whether or not the ADA applies to cops. And then at some point after they granted certiorari, said, yes, we're going to hear this case, one side flipped and said, no, we agree. So now both parties agree there's no triable case in controversy, so they should kick it.
Since when has the having an actual case in controversy limited this current Supreme Court?
It does sometimes, and it doesn't others. It's
not.
There's no hard and fast rules for this court, as
yeah,
we've learned.
No, they
there's
make them up as they go along.
Ian Milheiser.
Yeah, right, I think here. I heard that somewhere.
So, all right,
yes.
Callers.
All right, let's check in with Patty in Harstein Island, Washington. Patty, you had some thoughts on Ted Cruz.
Oh, I had lots of thoughts on Ted Cruz, mostly private versus public. First of all, a question of Ted Cruz is, if you abolish the IRS, how is he going to get the taxes collected to pay his salary or Homeland Security?
Well, I don't know if you remember another idea that floated out of Texas. I wonder if he's going to float something similar. Do you remember when Rick Perry in his presidential campaign said he was just going to have a postcard.
Actually, and Ted Cruz that said
it
that
was,
today.
Yeah, it, did he? It was just going to be a postcard, and it was simple math. Whatever your income is, multiplied by a flat tax, and there's your taxes. It was a postcard. That was what Rick Perry said.
The question is, and you're pointing out here, is, well, what if I don't fill out my postcard and I don't pay my X percent? Who is the person or the people in the institution that's going to come after me and says, hey, pay up your 8% of your 999%?
Yeah, interesting. Sorry, Patty. Go ahead.
Have to have IDs for these tax cards.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I don't know if are we going to have to start worrying about tax postcard fraud instead of voter fraud? Is that going to be the next scandal?
Oh, could be. But I'd like to name Ted Cruz and his gang the Butter Battle Boys after the Butter Battle book, Dr. Seuss book, that most folks don't know, and it's about basically they have to go underground because there's going to be nuclear devastation. And so I think we should call them the Butter Battle Boys, or maybe Regime Eggs and Spam.
I love that one. I love them all. And you just gave me an idea, Patty. Have you read the East Going, West Going Zach book?
North Going, South Going
North Zach. Going, South Going Zach book. By Dr. Seuss?
No.
Well, it's about...
No, that one I have not.
Everyone should go look into this now, because it's about two individuals that
Zacks.
Could not agree.
One was walking north, one was walking south, and they met up, and neither one of them would move a step to the left or a step to the right to continue on their journey. So they were so stubborn... They just stood there. The two Zacks stood there for eternity, and they built a city around them.
Right. So maybe Ted Cruz will have the Zack Pack.
That's awesome.
Maybe the Zack Pack would be good, and then they can fill it with the Butter Battle Boys, and we can build a big wall and do some Homeland Security and some fences, and then we'll be happy.
Oh, Patty, I love it. Thank you so much. Brilliant suggestion. Patty, thank you for hanging out with us there in Washington. Brilliant stuff. From callers today. It is such an honor to hang out with you guys and speak with you guys every day on the phones and today in Tom's chair. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Big thanks to Susan Meisner, Disability Counsel for the ACLU. Working hard for the rights of disabled people, could there be a more noble cause?
Yeah, and how many of these stories have we heard? We don't even hear probably a fraction of them.
I'm telling you, in the top of their article right here, they go through just a few.
Right.
In doing my research, 14 mentally ill individuals killed by cops in 2014 alone. And those are just noted in the mainstream media that those stories were collected. I wouldn't be surprised to find out there were more. And just to give a shout out with Tom, would we be in this situation if Reagan hadn't dismantled our mental health care system?
There you go.
You know, would cops be the ones dealing with people like this?
Right. And it makes a lot of sense. I don't think there's any specific exemption in the ADA.
There's not.
There's no language that says, you know, police officers under threat of whatever are exempt. So, therefore, the ADA applies to governments. So you must, therefore, you know, provide the accommodations in a situation where you know someone's mentally ill. And it's safe to do so.
No,
and there's already the safety,
right.
You know, exception there. So there's no problem. There's no issue here, which is probably why, you know, where there was a dispute before the Supreme Court, now there's not.
And let's just be, you know, point blank here. It wouldn't be a bad idea for cops in general to stop using lethal force as a first option.
Right.
Period.
Right.
When there is another alternative.
Well, they used to be peace officers.
Yeah.
Remember? Used to be serve and protect. They were peace officers. Now what are they called? They're called law enforcement officers.
Yeah.
Law enforcement. And you can also use the analogy of a car chase. You know, we always see the car chases on television.
Right? Mm-hmm.
But if a car chase gets too dangerous, they stop. They say, okay, it's not worth putting people's lives at risk by continuing to pursue this person. In all likelihood, we really believe, we certainly have probable cause to arrest. We're not going to be able to arrest this person. We're gonna retreat. We're going to put the public safety and the safety of even the criminal above, you know, his arrest, and we'll go at it a different way, and we'll try to arrest him a different way. I think that's all the ACLU is saying. And I'm not equating a criminal to somebody who's mentally ill, but if they're executing an arrest and they can't do so safely, you take a step back and you go about it a different way, and you don't put people's lives at risk if you can.
Right, if he can.
If the person is violent, is going to harm somebody, and there's an immediate harm, in this case that she described, there was not an immediate harm. The Ms. Sheehan was in her room. The room was closed. No other people were in that room. So all they're saying is, in those situations, let's try something other than force.
Right.
Under the ADA, you actually are required to try something
else. And she was sitting there calmly until they entered by force, including the gas, the tear gas, and guns drawn. You know, they created a hostile environment. And, you know, dealing with a mentally ill patient.
I'd like to hear from some police officers as well, though.
Right. I imagine it's a very difficult position to be in. You know, I certainly it can't be easy to, as I said, be dealing with a situation that other type of professionals, that physicians and mental health professionals used to be the primary go-to in a situation like that. And we just don't have the healthcare infrastructure.
But just as it's important to not harm people who have mental disabilities, it's also very important that cops go home to their families at night.
Right.
So we have a balance there.
But, you know,
in this case, it seems like it could. You had that opportunity to retreat and go about it a different way.
Right. So anyway, interesting thoughts. Let's check in with Chris, listening on Sirius in Darlington, South Carolina. Chris, thanks for listening to the Tom Harbin program.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I read an interesting article in the Huffington Post, you know, several weeks ago. So if I'm a little bit vague on the details, please excuse me. But the gist of the article was that the whole political right-wing Christian movement was started because Bob Jones, Jerry Falwell, and Pat Robertson got highly upset at the IRS after Brown versus Education, when all the private schools sprung up across the South, segregation academies, they were commonly referred to.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that was also written by Bruce Wilson, who we had on earlier, because I have an article by him here from 2013 saying Ted Cruz anointed by anti-gay, pro-religious war pastors. And it does talk about a lot of what you're getting into, about the religious roundtable and Brown versus the Board of Education, and how all of these events are tied together. It may have been something he wrote. I'm not sure.
I can't remember who wrote it. I thought it was a female author, but I'm not 100% on it. But, basically the gist of it was, the IRS came in, and these things were set up under the umbrella of various churches. But the IRS said, if your main reason for existence is segregation, you don't get tax exempt status.
Well,
took away their tax exempt, which made it a lot more expensive to operate. Hmm. And, their money stream dried up. It became a lot more expensive to shelter your kids from the blacks and, let the fun and games begin.
Yeah, I don't know offhand if he has ties to those type of organizations, but I know he certainly has ties to the Religious Roundtable and a lot of these anti-gay, just really the I don't know what the correct word for it is. What I would consider un-American type,
The article is called "The Religious Right Wasn't Created to Battle Abortion." It's by a woman named Sally Streeland. Streeland, does that sound?
Yeah, that's the article.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and I plan on reading it during the break at the bottom of the hour.
Thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate the information. Okay. Chris, thanks for listening on Sirius there in Free Speech TV. Real quick, let's check in with Corky in Rochester. Corky, you had some thoughts on Ted Cruz.
Yeah, I don't have a name for the pack, but I changed the car. It's the coward car now.
Instead of the clown car.
Yeah, it's filled with all these cowards that want to go to war but never went. You got, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and... you got the Sean Hannitys and the Mark Levins. Everybody wants to go to war, but nobody wore the uniform.
Well, a lot of them have buddies in the Defense Department, Corky, and in defense contractors, so they got to keep those donations flowing. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Who announces next?
Paul is April 7th.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Corky, thank you very much for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Shane says, Rand Paul's super PAC would be the Aqua Buddha super PAC. What do you think it should be called? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano sitting in for Tom today while he is on a much-deserved vacation. And quickly want to remind you. Yeah, he's probably still working. He's probably writing another book.
There it is.
Yes. But please go over and check out sistergiant.com if you're either in the L.A. area or if you can watch it on live stream for an event next weekend. Very cool event. Marianne Williamson. Just go check it out. All the information you need is there. So we've been talking about all kinds of interesting stuff today. Ted Cruz, Confederate license plate, and whether or not police officers should have to abide by the Americans with Disabilities Act. Lots of interesting stuff today.
I would think the callers actually want to put in their two cents.
Yeah.
We have some of the Seven Mountains thing, but we'll save that for later.
Yes.
that one I got to go through.
We'll have to save that for later in the week after we read it. But that's what Bruce Wilson mentioned earlier, the Seven Mountains. Go check it out on the DuckDuckGo machine.
Yeah.
It's pretty eye-opening. Let's check in with Charles, listening on WCPT.com in Opa-locka, Florida. Charles, thanks for hanging out with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, I do it, every day that you're on for the whole entire program. So, you're welcome. I just wanted to call in on Ted Cruz and the hypocrisy of the Republican Party. When Barack Obama was elected, there was, they came out with the birthers and all of this stuff that he wasn't an American citizen. And as far as I know, Ted Cruz was not born in the United States or none of the territories. So I'm kind of confused on why he's running. And, there's no way that we should stand up for them actually changing the goalposts whenever they want to. You know, they keep pushing it back and back, further back when we want, some of our ideas to work. But when they want, to implement whatever they want to on us without our, they basically
politicians just being hypocritical, Charles, I almost can't believe it.
Right, but here's a joke. There was John McCain yesterday on CNN, and he was on State of the Union, and his defense for Benjamin Netanyahu actually going hard right and going against the two-state solution was that, haven't you ever heard of politicians making promises that they didn't have to live up to?
Wow.
And to hear him say,
I did hear that. I know what you're talking about. Yes.
You know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So, I mean, basically, they ran out of lies. They're telling sometimes you can actually catch them really telling the truth. And I just thought to myself this morning, listening to a little bit of Ted Cruz, that, here go the lies. Suck it up. And when I get in the office, don't hold me to it.
See, I don't think he's one that will lie to get into office. I mean, probably every politician probably does it to some degree, but I think he is proud of his religious right background. I think he is proud of his hard right stances. I mean, for goodness sakes, he was willing to shut down the entire government to make it perfectly clear what he thought. I don't think he's going to deliver false promises.
I will, however, say that on his comments on Common Core, there were some fibs in there. And if you go over to Think Progress, who has documented Ted Cruz on his characterizations of Common Core, he says that it's the federal government telling states what to do. That's not what it is. He says it has to be repealed. It's never been enacted, things like that. So there are definitely some fibs in there.
Yeah, and he's a smart enough man to know when he's
right
talking nonsense. Sorry, Charles, go ahead.
I'm sorry, there's one more thing.
Sure.
No, I think he is being backed by the big party donors. I think what he has, he's found a niche where he's good at, and he's good at the way he portrays himself. And that's just basically it. But he's a run-of-the-mill politician. He'll do anything and say anything to get in politics. And then basically, he has a constituency and a backing. But I think his big money is behind him. Don't please.
Yeah.
These guys, they go to college, and their main thing is to get money. What's the one way that they can make money, and that's to bleed the federal government, whether it's running for office or being in office and picking up issues that concern them the most. But it's just about that threat mentality. How much money can we bleed out of this government?
We'll have to see. I don't know whether the big backers are supporting him or Walker. I think it's too early to say.
There are some big money Christian conservatives.
Yes.
Though. Those are the Donahoes, the guy who started Domino's Pizza. There is some big money Christian. No, they aren't exclusive. You know?
Yeah, and a lot of them think that the reason why Republicans haven't run is because they haven't been far enough right. So you could be right.
Well, sure, there's a big story in Politico today about how Jeb Bush is a little bit scared of talk radio, which, you know, you're welcome here any time. We're not scary. But I think he's more talking about the Laura Ingrams, Rush Limbaughs of the world. Because
they haven't been too kind.
Every time that they lose a presidential election, they say, see, we didn't go far enough right. With John McCain, they did this. With Mitt Romney, they did this. And they are already calling, you know, Mark Levin is calling Jeb Bush a liberal Republican. So I think Ted Cruz will be just right at home.
I think that the big backers probably throw a little money in everybody's kitty, if you will, until they can throw all of it behind the obvious winner.
Last election during the primaries, there were a bunch of different billionaires who they kind of had their stake. It's called stake horsing. You know, you had a billionaire for each one of the candidates. So Santorum had his billionaire, and Newt has his billionaire. When one would drop out, a billionaire would come over to another one. So, you know, it's kind of like staking horses.
Yes, there is certainly a zoo joke in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charles, for the call and for listening there in Opa-locka, Florida. Let's check in with Maine, listening in Chicago, Illinois. Maine, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, how are you doing?
We're doing very well, thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to, I have several comments, really.
Well, we still have lots of people on hold, Maine, so why don't you start with your favorite one?
Okay. Well, one of the main ones is voting. I think voting should be mandatory. Just like back in the Revolutionary times when they had Minutemen, that was just able-bodied men who were on their farms or clearing their land or whatever they were doing. But when it came time for them to organize to fight the British, they were called out and they were called Minutemen. And I think that we as Americans should have it should be mandatory to vote in order to protect the democracy.
Well, yeah. Can I interrupt here, though? It would take a constitutional amendment to do that.
It may take that, but then if that's what it takes, then let's do that.
Okay.
Because without the vote, then there's really no democracy, because the Koch brothers and them, they had in this money now through these super PACs and stuff like that. But if this thing continues, they'll be handing the check right in front of you on TV nationwide, shaking the hand of the candidate who they done just bought and said, yeah, see, this is how we do it.
Yeah, it's not that far from that scenario right now, Maine. I hear you.
And to clarify on the mandatory voting, and I think Tom touched on this too, under the First Amendment, the government can't tell you what to say. And the Supreme Court has said that also means you have the right under the First Amendment to say nothing.
Right.
You have the right to just not speak. Voting, of course, is political speech. So the government can't tell you not to speak. So under the First Amendment, the way things have kind of unraveled through our history is the government can't force you to vote. So mandatory voting will require an amendment to amending the First Amendment to the Constitution. It's possible, I guess. I would rather, instead of going that route, is actually get people more involved and try to bring it up by people's knowledge of what's going on, their enthusiasm for the candidates, and getting money out of politics so that people feel that their votes actually mean something.
Yeah.
I think that would naturally bring it up. If it still didn't, then if we did all those things first, maybe as a last resort.
I think just as we saw turnout increase dramatically with President Obama, at least in his first election, I think if we had candidates that people were really excited about, it would get more people out on election day. And I also think that if we were going to make something mandatory, maybe an incentive like a tax break would work better. And maybe there's a way to do that without an amendment.
Perhaps. But in to say that, you know, all these other things will work better doesn't mean that we have to do them first.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with creating enthusiasm. There's nothing wrong with trying to increase turnout. I think that's all the president was saying. He wasn't saying, let's use Australia's model. He was just saying the higher the participation rate, the better off we are. And the antithesis, of course, is Paul Weyrich's, the less participation, the better off it is for us conservatives.
Yeah. Well, let's check in with Kurt, listening online in Los Angeles, California. Kurt, you had some thoughts about the ADA case.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call, and good afternoon. I wanted to ask what – I don't understand how this could even happen. It's a 50-year-old lady in a room by herself minding her own business for all intents and purposes, and I think she was right. If they didn't have probable cause or warrant, I don't understand why these officers felt the need to bum-rush her room. And I don't understand if they did call for backup, why they could not have just simply waited until more officers did arrive and or, you know, call some type of professional psychiatric, you know, the paddy wagon, you know, the people with the white coats, you know, and the straitjacket, you know, they're more trained to deal with situations like this. And so I want to know if we can get an officer as a guest on your show later in the week or something, a retired sergeant or somebody, and explain, is there some type of quota? You know, did these guys need to make an arrest so badly that they felt this was going to be an easy one, and they felt, let's just go in there and arrest her, get on
hold up? Kurt, I think it may be impossible to go back and figure out what the people, the officers involved in that specific incident were thinking. But maybe we can talk to somebody who has been in a similar situation and get their thoughts. It's not a bad idea. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And thanks for hanging out with us there in Los Angeles, California. We'll be back with more. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program on Free Speech TV. Let's check in with Gary watching on Dish Network in East Point, Michigan. Gary, thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program.
Yes. Hello. How are you guys today?
We are doing very well. Thanks.
You guys do a great job. You do. I think Tom's wonderful. I watch. I'd probably catch you at least three times a week. But anyway, I have a problem with what you guys said.
Okay.
As you guys said that Scott Walker and Ted Cruz is a pawn. Well, Webster's Dictionary of a pawn is a person who is manipulated.
I actually said I think Scott Walker is a pawn. I don't know that I think Ted Cruz is a pawn. I think he might be too smart for that. Well, or if he's a pawn, I can't figure out who's pushing his buttons, who's making the call there.
Do you think that Scott Walker is being manipulated to serve the interests of the Koch brothers, or is he a willing participant? I disagree completely.
Okay.
I think anybody that goes to the Koch brothers, they're either sociopaths at best or psychopaths at worst. They are willing participants for the destruction of the middle class and democracy in this country. People can't, they're not that dumb. Scott Walker's not that stupid being manipulated. He's going to gain financially. And the person who said they're not that, like, I think it was Ted Cruz is worth $250 million, is not one of them. I think it should be stated more the opposite. He is not one of us. He's not one of the middle class who's going to lose everything once these people get their way.
There's certainly points I could agree with.
And also, pawn doesn't necessarily mean that it's an unwilling participant. I can understand reading that into it. I think Scott Walker is going along knowingly for his own benefit, but I don't think that he's the one calling the shots. I think when a decision comes down and he were to disagree with it, and the Koch brothers, he would disagree with the Koch brothers over a certain decision, and the Koch brothers said do X, and he said, no, I want to do Y, he would ultimately do X because the Koch brothers told him to. That's why I say pawn.
That's why he is, you know, that to say he's a pawn is giving too much credit. He's a willing participant in destruction. They're more sociopathic, psychopathic.
Well, I certainly can't disagree with the sociopath. I won't go as far as psychopath. I don't know them personally. But it does seem to me that some of them don't care about the fallout of their actions. That's just my personal opinion. Let's check in. Thank you, Gary, for watching on Dish Network there in Michigan. Do we have time for one more?
We do.
Let's check in real quickly with Bruce in Braddock, Pennsylvania. Bruce, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about the Ted Cruz CPAC or Super PAC.
Yeah, go for it. You're
calling it the let's claim it the be afraid, be very afraid, and let's make every 6-year-old little girl cry. I was watching C-SPAN and I saw the budget that's been proposed by the Republicans, and it's all for the rich and screwing the poor. And if people, Democrats, don't get out and vote in 2016, then They have nothing but themselves to blame for it. They should have been out in 2014. They didn't go. And this is what we have to deal with.
You said it, Bruce.
And referring to this phrase.
The world is on fire. Yes.
I found it interesting that Ted Cruz used the word ignite a lot in his speech today. We have to ignite the Christian movement. We ignite the conservative voter. Yet, a week after scaring a little girl
the world is on fire. Yes.
I think I would stay away from fire metaphors, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would probably stay away from them. But, Bruce, thank you for your thoughts there in Pennsylvania. We'll be right back with more here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Thank you for hanging out with us today. Tom will be back next week. He's on vacation, so Shano and I will be here doing our best all week, and we hope you stick around with us. Let's check in with John, listening on Sirius in Rome, Georgia. John, you have some interesting information here.
Hey, yes. Hope you all are okay today. Yes, I'm a pharmacist, and I also am the parent of a Asperger's autistic son.
Okay.
And let me just comment about these policemen and how they are handling the mentally ill. And here's where I come from. You would not believe the number of policemen and the number of highway patrol that come into the pharmacy and get prescriptions for testosterone injections.
Do you see a number of other men, you know, who are not in those professions also, you know, getting those same medications? I mean, is this something unique to police officers or?
It is not unique to police officers, but I would, and it's a hasty generalization, but I would tell you that there are quite a few. I mean, I can't give you a specific number, but it's really bothers me because it makes them more aggressive. I just wanted to say they need to be very careful about how they handle the mentally ill. And, you know, it'd be kind of nice if, I don't know, if police departments do drug tests on their officers or not, but it would be kind of nice to know how many officers in your department shot up with testosterone twice a month.
Well, you know, the bigger question for me there would be, why are doctors prescribing it? Is it something that's medically necessary, or is it more along the lines of creatine or, you know, these type of supplements that people often take to make themselves feel more masculine? But as the parent of an Asperger's child, I can imagine this is a topic that hits home for you. And it is a big question of where police officers' responsibility lies. And, you know, are we asking too much? Are we putting them in jeopardy, risking their safety, to ask them to consider somebody's mental capacity before pulling out their handgun?
Courts consider mental capacity. If there's time to consider it, they should too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They should. I tend to believe that. I'm not a police officer.
Right. That's why I'd love to hear from a cop.
Yeah. We do have a police officer. John, thank you very much for listening there in Georgia. And it's something to consider. I don't know what the side effects of those type of supplements are. I can imagine, but I'm certainly not a doctor. Let's check in with Jim in Riverhead, New York. Your brother is a police officer. And you had some thoughts on this, Jim.
Well, I think it's kind of generalizing about police officers that they're aggressive. I mean, we have, I think it was tens of thousands of arrests in this country every single day. And, you know, why are people second-guessing cops? I mean, if we remember, the guy that did the shooting in Newtown, he had Asperger's syndrome.
Right.
But what if we had him and we let him go? Let's say we had him and we said, oh, let's not get aggressive and let's not stop him. And he shot those kids anyway. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, there's policemen we read every day in the New York Post that are attacked with machetes and knives and guns by people that are not
right, but there's
we're not talking
to get second guess.
Well, first of all, we are allowed to second guess because we're citizens and the police work for us. So we are allowed to second guess. And we're not asking that the cops actually subject themselves to being harmed. If there's an imminent danger, the ADA will not apply. There's an exemption there, and they don't have to take into account. They have to protect themselves first. As I said, and it's just as important that cops get home to their families as people don't get harmed being arrested.
Right.
But if there is that time, if there is that moment for reflection, do they have an obligation to do that? That's my question.
I'm sorry, there's a generalization right there back that a person with mental illness isn't automatically the next Newtown shooter. Sometimes it's an individual in a bedroom at a facility. You know, their generalizations work in both directions. It's also the generalizations that often lead to racially motivated shootings, or at least our opinions of them after those events transpire.
I really dislike that. Don't second guess cops. First of all, we're not second guessing.
Right.
If they've done something wrong, then that we'll let a trial go ahead with that, and then we let jurors do that. It's not second guessing. There's that phrase, who will police the police? The police still have to operate within the bounds of the law, and we, the citizens, have an obligation and a right to make sure the police do that. That's not second guessing. That's saying, here are the parameters under which you wished we're going to have our police operate. If you don't wish to operate under those, one, you're going to break the law and go to jail, or two, you're going to be something other than a cop.
Right.
Period.
So, but, Jim, I appreciate your opinion. Thank you for the call there in New York.
I hope more cops call in, though.
We only have a couple minutes here, but let's check in really quickly with Hack in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hack, thanks for listening to Sirius.
You bet. I even have a song for Ted Cruz's campaign.
I see that.
My country, 'tis of the land of theocracy. From thee I flee.
Yes. Hack, what do you think? Do you think he's trying to create a theocracy or would like to do so if he was elected?
Oh, dang straight. I think you guys ought to book Chris Hedges on the show.
I would love to speak with Chris Hedges. I'll get right on that. Sean, are you listening? Yes. What do you think about his candidacy? Is this something we should take seriously or is it a joke?
I believe it should be taken seriously, not because Ted Cruz is a serious candidate. I think he's performance art, but his followers are absolutely rabid and stuff like that. So.
Excellent point, Hack. Thank you very much, and thanks for hanging out with us there on Sirius. We will be back tomorrow in for Tom and still taking all your calls. Thank you for hanging out, watching, listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com, everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.